We have been going through 1 Corinthians verse by verse. We've made it to chapter 10. Took a small break for a couple of weeks, but we're back now. So our text for today is going to be 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 to 13. The Apostle Paul writes, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, and do not become idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." Amen. Now, this passage finds us right in the middle of a discussion that began a couple of chapters ago, in chapter 8. If you remember, back in chapter 8, he started off by saying, "Now, concerning things that have been offered to idols." What's going on? The Corinthian church, the Corinthian Christians, were living in an extremely pagan society. Everywhere you turned, there was a temple. Everywhere you turned, there was an altar to some god or goddess. All of society was connected with some kind of pagan worship. If you went to school, there would be a god who was the protector of the school. If you were a soldier, there was a god who was a protector of the soldier. If you had whatever job you had, whatever skill you had, there was a certain patron god of that. If you were an athlete, you would have a certain god that you were expected to worship. So wherever you are in society, wherever position, whatever job you have, whether you're a student, whether you're a grown-up, whatever it is that you're doing, you're expected to participate in what everyone else participates. And it was all centered around pagan worship. So what do you do? You're living in ancient Corinth, and you're a former idolater, former pagan who has now become a Christian, and all your friends, all your family are going to the temple to worship Apollo. What do you do? Your co-workers are having a work meeting, and they're going to first offer something to the god of whatever job it is that you're doing. What do you do? What do the Corinthians do? Now, many of the Corinthians had found the solution, they thought. Here's what their solution was. We go. We go to the pagan temple. We participate in whatever it is that they're doing. We eat the food that has been sacrificed to idols. We don't believe it. We don't believe that. But we go and we do it. Because we know that these gods don't exist. They're not real. Right? So what does it matter? When you're offering a sacrifice, if you're offering a sacrifice to nothing, it doesn't matter. If you're eating food that has been sacrificed to nothing, it doesn't matter. It's fine. It's fine. And everyone is happy. Friends and family are happy. We're all happy. It's a win-win situation. So it seems that the Corinthians had this attitude where they were basically saying to Paul, "Look, we know what you're going to say, Paul. You're going to say we shouldn't be doing this. You're going to say that it's dangerous. We shouldn't be participating in idolatrous worship and all those things, that we're going to be tempted, that we're going to fall into sin. But don't worry. Don't worry, Paul. It's fine. You know why? Because we're mature Christians. We're spiritual. We're strong. We can handle being in idolatrous situations and not fall into sin. We're fine. We're strong enough to handle that. It's not a problem. We can do all these things and it won't affect us. Which brings us to today's passage, which the main point of the passage, the main theme, can be summarized by verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. He's like, we're fine. We're strong. We're not going to fall into sin. We can handle it if we are participating in idolatry. And Paul says, be careful. Be very careful not to play around with these things. So what Paul is going to do today is he is going to, what Paul is going to do in this passage is he's going to give him a history lesson, basically. Because he knows that those who don't listen to history are doomed to repeat it. And so he is going to show them from the Old Testament that the nation of Israel that thought, hey, we're the people of God, it's fine, and thought it was a light thing. They thought it was an insignificant thing to play around with other religions and other gods. And as a result, they were destroyed for it. And so Paul is warning the Corinthians, be careful. Warning the Corinthians and us, be careful. If you're planning on associating yourself with a false god or with a false religion, it's not innocent. It's not neutral. And it's not safe. The Lord our God is a jealous God who won't allow the worship of anyone but himself. Nor does he allow the mixing of, well, we'll worship God and we'll worship other things too, and we'll just kind of have it both ways so everyone can be happy. No. So, the lesson in this passage is for those who think, I'm fine, I'm strong, I'm not in danger of falling into sin because I'm a mature Christian. Paul says, be careful. Don't be overconfident in yourself and in your own ability because it could go badly. So look what he does here. Verse 1. He says, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea. What is he referring to? The Exodus. Okay? When God brought the Israelites out of Egypt and he set them free from Egyptian bondage, and he is leading them to the promised land. He says, remember our fathers. As a quick side note here, you may say, wait a minute, but the Corinthians were Greek. Our fathers, those people who came out of Egypt were Israelites. Yeah, see, apparently he views the Christians in Corinth as the continuation of Old Testament Israel there. So he says, okay, so remember our fathers. Remember what happened to them. He says they were all under the cloud. What's that a reference to? Remember there was this cloud with the presence of God leading them as they went during the day? He says they were all under the cloud. Also, they all passed through the sea. The Red Sea opened up for them and they walked across to safety. He says, all of Israel was saved from Egypt. All of Israel was set free. All of Israel was taken care of by God. Verse 2, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All right, that's a strange statement right there. That's a strange statement because nowhere else do you read about being baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. That's a weird statement there. And let me just make a quick side note here, and then I'll try and move right back. Whenever baptism is mentioned, people immediately jump on it to try and defend their view of baptism. And because baptism is mentioned here, you have those who baptize babies or sprinkle, you know, they immediately go to this passage and they say, look, it says they were baptized under the in the cloud. And how do you get wet from a cloud? A cloud rains on you. So it's okay to sprinkle water on someone, and that's baptism. And the Baptists say, no. But it also says they went through the sea. All right, that's how you get baptized. You go down into the sea, and then you come up. That's how you get baptized. Now, let me just say, this entire conversation is pointless, because none of this passage has anything to do specifically with the mode of baptism. All right, nothing to do with that. If you just think for a second, first of all, the Israelites didn't actually get wet when they went into the sea. Okay, they didn't get into the sea. The sea opened up. It was walls of water on the side, and they walked on dry land. So none of them got wet at all. And two, the cloud was not there raining on them. It was not a rain cloud. There was no water in that cloud. It was a cloud full of the presence of God. And at night, it turned into a pillar of fire. So this is nothing, this is not about how should we baptize people, all right? So let's just put that out of the way really quick. Just because I know people jump on this to try and say, this is how you should get baptized. No. What's the point? The point of all of what he says here, baptism has to do with identifying with Christ. Baptism is about identifying with Christ and how you're buried and raised together with him. And so what Paul is doing here, he says, just as in the New Covenant, you're baptized into Christ and you become part of the Christian community and you identify with Christ, so in the Old Testament, all of Israel was baptized into Moses. He says they all became part of this covenant community following Moses as their leader. That's all it's saying, okay? So we don't have to get too crazy about this verse. So, all of Israel came out of Egypt. All of Israel was under the sea, went through the sea, was under the cloud. Verse 3, all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. What's that talking about? What's the food that they ate? They didn't have food in the desert, so what did God do for 40 years? Gave them manna to eat, bread from heaven. All right? When it says spiritual food, that doesn't mean that the food itself was not tangible or there was immaterial or something like that. It just means that it was, its origin was spiritual. It was provided miraculously from the Spirit. Right? Likewise, they had spiritual drink. We remember that. They asked for water and God gave them water from a rock. And they drank water. Okay, so God is providing for them all the time when he brought them out of Egypt. Verse 4, continuing. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them. I got to say another point here. This is a lot of strange language here that is being used, so I got to give you a quick explanation. It's strange that it said they drank from that spiritual rock that followed them. If you look at the Old Testament, you read, as soon as they come out of Egypt, they ask for water, and God gives them water from a rock. Okay. Then, in the book of Numbers, where 40 years have gone by, they're asking for water again, and God gives them water from a rock again, second time. And so, Jews would often look at that, and they would say, what happened in the 40 years in between when they were walking around in the wilderness? So, there was an assumption that perhaps there was always a rock for the 40 years, that wherever they went, that gave them water. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. Text doesn't explicitly say that, but perhaps Paul has something like that in mind when he says that this rock followed them around wherever they were and gave them water. Not that the rock was rolling around behind them or anything, but wherever they were, that there was God's presence was there and would give them water through a rock. Perhaps. But either way, Paul says, but keep in mind that that rock that followed them was Christ. Christ was the one who was with them wherever they went. A millennium and a half before he was born in Bethlehem, Christ was with the Israelites in the wilderness, and he was providing for them. Wherever they went, he was the one who refreshed them. He was the one who actually gave them water. You say to me, Nico, okay, what is the point of these four verses? We just read four verses. What's the point? What Paul is trying to do, he's trying to show a parallel between Israel in the Old Testament and the Corinthian church. He's right, look, they were protected and taken care of by Christ. They were baptized just as you were baptized. They had spiritual food just like you have communion. Maybe that's what he has in mind. They were set free from bondage as you were set free from sin. We are like them. The Christian church is like them. We are like our fathers. Okay? Verse 5, but here's the thing. We're like them. God took care of all of them, was taking care of them. But, verse 5, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. He says, all of them, five times in these four verses, says, all of them went through the sea. All of them were baptized into Moses. All of them were fed by God. All of them went through this, but most of them displeased God and therefore died in the wilderness. And when it says most of them, that's an understatement. Pretty much all of them. From the thousands that came out of Israel, how many actually made it to the promised land? For you Bible scholars out there, two. 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 Joshua and Caleb. That's it. Okay, Paul, why are you telling us this? Verse 6. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. The lesson for us is to be careful, as we are like our fathers, not to go after evil things, not to start doing things that God told us not to do, not to want things that God told us not to want. But why, Paul? What are we doing? Verse 7. Do not become idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Paul says, I want you to be very careful. Oh, but all we're doing is we're just sitting down and eating and drinking in a pagan temple. That's all we're doing. That's what the Israelites did. And they were destroyed. And he quotes from Exodus 32. You know what? I want to show you something, because it's important. I want to show you something. Can you go with me to Exodus 32? And we'll come back to 1 Corinthians. It's the passage where the Jews decide to build this golden calf and worship it in the desert. So Exodus 32, verse 1, it says, now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. All right? So they say, oh, we don't know what happened to Moses, so they revert back to the way that they used to worship back when they were in Egypt, and they go to Aaron, and they say, make us gods. Now, if you read that in the Hebrew, the word Elohim, it can be translated gods, or it can be translated God, singular. Many times God is called Elohim. So you could legitimately translate this, come, make us God. Make us. We want to see God. That's what we want, because we don't know what happened to Moses. And Aaron said to them, verse 2, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people broke off the golden earrings which are in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molten calf. Then they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. So they're not saying, oh, let's just follow some other Egyptian god or some Canaanite god or anything like that. This is a representation of Jehovah right here, this golden calf. Don't believe me? Look what Aaron says. Verse 5. So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast to who? The Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, Yahweh, Jehovah. That's the name of the God of Israel. We're not worshiping pagan gods, we're worshiping our own God. He brought us out of Egypt. Jehovah. By making an image and bowing down to it. That's the passage. And then, verse 6, then they arose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. That is the passage that Paul quotes. And something that I want to point this out because I find it fascinating, is that they are worshiping, supposedly, the true God, but they're worshiping Him the way that pagans worship. Okay? Why do you say that, Nico? Why are you pointing that out? I'll tell you why. Because someone may say, oh, but we live in Greece, so it's fine. I don't see any pagan temples. I don't see any pagan altars. I don't see any statues to Apollo or to Aphrodite or anything like that. So we're fine here. All we have here is Greek Orthodoxy everywhere, and they worship Jesus, so it's fine. Yeah, and they have images of Him which they bow down to. So we're worshiping Jesus, but we do it the way the pagans do it. Just like the people in Moses' day. And we could talk about Roman Catholics, and we could talk about many more. Paul is saying, we can go back to 1 Corinthians. The Corinthians are like, oh, it's fine. It's just... Maybe they're thinking in their minds, fine, I'll go, when I go to the pagan temple and I eat the food there, when everyone else is praying to Apollo, I'm praying to Jesus. It's fine. I don't believe any of that. Paul is saying, playing with fire here, this is very dangerous. In the next verse, verse 14, after our passage today, he says, therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Be careful. Verse 8. He's like, I'm not done. Don't become idolaters, he said in verse 7. Just like they were. Look at verse 8. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. What's it talking about here? Again, in the wilderness, some Moabite women come over to the camp, and they say to the men, hey, why don't you come hang out with us? Sure, why not? Let's go hang out with the ladies. It'll be great. Then the ladies say, hey, we're going to go to the temple of our God and worship. You want to come with us? Sure, why not? We're not going to believe that. But hey, the girls want us to go, so we'll go. Hey, we're going to sacrifice some of these things to our gods. You want to sacrifice with us? Sure, we're not going to believe that. But hey, we kind of like the girls and they want to do this, so we'll do it. That's what happened. And then they fall into all kinds of sexual immorality, which was probably part of the whole religious worship of the Moabites. And so what happened? God sent a plague and struck down, as Paul says, 23,000 in one day. I got to make another side note here. I have to do this because if I don't, people will think that I'm avoiding the problem. There's an issue here because if you're reading the book of Numbers and it talks about this story, it says that the people who died were 24,000. And Paul says 23,000. So people say, aha, contradiction in the Bible. There's 1,000 difference. All right, let me give you a couple of the options, then I'll move on really quick because I don't want to spend too much time here. Some people say, well, perhaps what happened was, oftentimes, the number is not exactly, and people and the Bible rounds it out, like we do all the time. You round it off somewhere. So they say perhaps it was somewhere between 23,000 and 24,000. Moses decided to round it up at 24. Paul decides to round it up at 23. That's a possibility. Others say, well, Paul says that 23,000 died in one day. Moses doesn't say it was in one day. Moses just says that 24,000 died. So he says, well, maybe 23,000 died that day and others hung on a little longer in their sickness and died a bit later. I don't know. And there's a lot of other different interpretations to this. If you're interested, come to me afterwards and I'll give you all the details of other possibilities. But let's move on. His point is, don't be idolaters. Don't commit sexual immorality. Verse 9, nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Again, people of Israel, complain, complain, complain. We don't have food. God gives them the manna. Oh, but we miss the food that we used to have in Egypt. Always complaining. And so God had sent serpents to bite them. Verse 10, nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Always complaining, never content with what God gave them, always wanted more, always pushing the boundaries in everything that they did, and so God would send a destroyer to punish them. What's the point of all this, Paul? Verse 11. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. It's an interesting phrase right there, upon whom the end of the ages have come. With the coming of Christ and the coming of the Spirit, we're in this final era of the world, the final age where we are now waiting for Christ to come back. And he says, all the things that happened before this, all the ages that came before this, all the things that happened then, they weren't coincidences. These things that happened to Israel, they weren't a coincidence. They happened to teach us a lesson. We need to learn from these things. What's the lesson? Verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, be careful, lest he fall. The Israelites... we're saying, we're fine. We're the people of God. He brought us out of Egypt. And then they fell and died in the wilderness. I'm reminded of Jesus, who says to his disciples on the night that he was betrayed, they're going to arrest me, and then all of you are going to scatter. And Peter is like, not me! I'm not going to do it. And yeah, all of you. Nope. Even if everyone else runs away, I will be there for you, Jesus. Peter, before the rooster crows, you're going to deny me three times. Nope. Not me. I'm the rock. I'm Peter. You can count on me, Jesus. I will be there whatever happens. Don't be puffed up. Don't think too much of yourself. Sin is lurking at the door, so be careful lest you fall. Just a couple of weeks ago, we were reading about the church in Laodicea in the book of Revelation. What were they saying? We are rich. We have need of nothing. And Jesus says, you don't know that you're wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. You think you're fine, but you're not fine. Be careful. So Paul is saying to the Corinthians here, you think you're fine. You think you can handle it. You think hanging around with all this idolatry won't affect you. Be careful, lest you fall. We have this hymn that we sing, where the lyrics say, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. I like those verses. You know why? Because they're real. We may not want to talk about that. But it's realistic. It says, you know what? We're weak. We sin so easily. So easily. I don't want you to think that I'm saying, oh, we can't have assurance of salvation, and we can't have confidence. We can, but our confidence is not in ourselves and in our own ability. If we have assurance of salvation, it's because of who Christ is, and we're trusting the promises of Christ. As Greg prayed earlier, he who began a good work in you, he will bring it to completion. If we have confidence in our Christian life, it's because of Christ. We're not trusting in ourselves. It's not self-confidence. It's not saying, well, I've been doing pretty well lately, so I think it'll be fine. I preached a good sermon last week, so it'll be fine. I went to church on Sunday, so I'm good. I've been baptized. I have communion. I go to Bible study. I do all these things. I'm fine. So did the Israelites, and they died in the wilderness. It's not about, oh, but I'm doing the right things. I'm doing what I should be doing, so I think I'm fine. It's not about trusting in our own strength. It's about being confident in Christ that He will sustain us. The Corinthians, as you go through the book of Corinthians, constantly, what is Paul always telling them? They're proud, they think they're wise, they think they're spiritual, they think they're better than everyone else. We're not going to fall into sin, we're fine. Romans 7. The wise man says, O wretched man that I am, who would deliver me from this body of death? The proud person doesn't say, oh, wretched man that I am. The proud person says, I'm fine. I'm good the way that I am. And Paul says, be careful. Don't be playing games with idolatry, with your soul. Be faithful to Christ. But he closes in this way, verse 13. He says, no temptation has overtaken you, except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Paul, you don't understand. You don't know what it's like to have family who are not Christians and they expect things of you. Paul, you don't know what it's like to be living in a society where everyone does this, and I'm expected to follow along and do that. You don't know what it's like to be tempted with food or with women or with all these things. And Paul says, really? None of these temptations are exceptional. Everyone has to go through these things. Everyone has to deal with these things. But, in the middle of verse 13, he says, this is common to man. But, and here are the words that need to be carved in stone, carved in gold, but God is faithful. He's going to help you through this. Yes, you're going to be tempted. This is what happens when you live in a sinful world. But God is faithful, and He is there to help you and keep you through the temptation. The Israelites, they had an option. No one put a gun to their head and said, you need to bow down to the image. There was a way of escape, but they didn't take it. They decided to go after their own lusts. So the question is, what do? We have the option. Do we follow Christ, or do we just, well, this is what everyone else is doing, so let's do that. Paul says, we have a faithful God who promises to help us when we call upon Him. Jesus said, when you pray, pray what? Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. I'll close. A couple of weeks ago, I was down at the Russian church and we baptized a gentleman. And after he was baptized, we were talking. And this may be common to everyone after they get baptized. I don't know. I remember it was true with me. When I was baptized, I was like, I'm not sinning from now on. That's it. I've been baptized, living for Jesus right now. And I was talking with him, and he wasn't pumped like that, but he seemed concerned. And he said, I'm worried. Right after he was baptized, he said, I'm worried that I may fall into sin because I know my heart. I know I'm prone to wander. And I said to him, we're all like that. And he said, really? I thought it was just me. And he wasn't joking. He meant that. He's like, I thought it was just me. And I said, no, it's not just you. We're weak. We're weak. So don't play around where you can fall into sin. Don't put yourself into situations where you know you're not going to be able to handle it. Promises. The good thing is that Paul says something that he repeats in 2 Corinthians basically. He says, I know that when I'm weak, He's strong. and He can take care of me. So when temptation comes your way, there is a way of escape. It's about keeping your mind on Christ. We try and put Christ out of our mind so we can do what we want to do. Keep your eyes on Christ. Call on Him for help, and He will help you, even in the difficult situations. Thank you for your attention. Let's pray.